Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, Javier, what'd you think? Thumbs up, thumbs down for a two-hour, largely angle-free, promo-free, well, a little bit of an angle here and there, but, you know, mostly just a presentation of some matches that were hyped up with mostly titles on the line. MJF retaining his title and Saraya retaining her title. Rey Fénix upsetting Jon Moxley for the international title. Jericho winning and then being turned on by Sammy Guevara. And Eddie Kingston winning the ROH World title. Some news on this event. What'd you think?
I'll give it a thumbs up. Not super enthusiastic, because I think there were some issues I had with the show, but overall, I thought it was a good experience.
Do you have an obvious best match of the night? Because Claudio Eddie was good, Jericho Sammy was good, Moxley Fénix was good, but you know, obviously the issue of the botched finish and concern about Moxley after a couple pile drivers and maybe being concussed. I don't have an update on that yet. I don't know if anything has come out.
The Moxley thing, I went back and before we came on, I replayed it a few times. It sounds like Moxley, after the ref stopped counting, says, "What the F are you doing?" So I think this was a ref botch is what it looks like, because Moxley does say something. So it wasn't like he was out.
Yeah. I mean, unless he, you know, just had some physical issue and was telling the ref, "Don't touch me. Give me a minute," you know, something like that too. But
No, it was like the moment that he stops counting and the ref starts searching, he does. I don't know. He could have been I don't think he was referring to Fénix. I think it's just that the ref didn't know that was the finish. And so, you know, didn't count. That's what it most likely seems to me, but you know, I'll let you do your journalism.
Yes. So that was a good match, and then MJF Samoa Joe, also a good match. Nothing jumped out to me as just obviously better than the others by a wide margin, so I am kind of curious how the poll results will turn out in various places. But what stood out to you as a best match of the night?
For me, I thought that Joe and MJF was heads above the rest for the most part. I liked the Sammy Jericho one. I just thought that there needed to be a little bit more like in-ring acting between the two of them to really like make it feel like what it was supposed to be. That one botch also didn't help. And I thought the Kingston and Claudio one was also for the most part really good. My thing is that I haven't really bought into the story. So I think that's more, I could see most people choose either the MJF Samoa Joe or the Claudio one as the best one.
Yeah. Yep. I thought they were close. I didn't think MJF and Joe was like worlds ahead of the other matches. I'd have that as best match, but I thought Moxley Fénix was good and Jericho Sammy, well, that had some issues. That would not be in contention for number one. Yeah, I guess I'm a little more with you than I realized as I'm kind of looking at this and thinking through it. But Claudio Eddie was a really good hard hitting opener, and the crowd was so into it. But I get what you're saying about the story of the match. I mean, it was a bit of a mess. So we had Claudio after the match shaking hands with Eddie. Kind of seemed like, okay, we fought it out. You won. Congrats. And, you know, the announcer said, they said, you know, the winner will be the better man. And that seemed to be an official turn of Claudio to align with Moxley and Danielson, and I guess Yuta, who just kind of goes along with them, as where Blackpool Combat Club officially babyfaces now. Is that the proper interpretation, Javier?
No, I think the handshake, I would read too much into it, because that was part baked into the story, where there was a previous issue where one of the two refused a handshake after the other person beat him. So that was more like, okay, fine, you beat me. I don't think it was like a strong endorsement of an actual like change or any of that. So,
the body language was like not reluctant and I'm bitter, but kind of genuine. As I described it, hey, we fought it out. You're the better man tonight. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong, and it certainly was storyline, But it wasn't like, you know, you can shake someone's hand and make it clear demonstratively that, that you don't, that you're not really being honorable about it.
Well, no, but I'm saying he did earn the respect of Claudio, but I don't think, you know, based on the characters that the Bullet Club, the Black Bullet Club guys are, I don't, you know, based on their alignment, I don't think it necessarily means that, hey, I'm going to be, you know, a baby face now. More like, okay, you know, we've been going at this long enough where you did earn my respect. It doesn't mean that we're going to be out, you know, having drinks after the show. That's more like my point, you know, that, you know, I don't think that's like a full on baby face, you know, we're going to be a baby face. Cause they're still going to be doing the, I'm going to kick your effing head in, that kind of stuff. I think that's more like what they still want to do. I think that they should go back to where they were before they turned heel because I mean, that's about the only difference, but I don't think this was necessary, like anything highlighting that's what they're going to do.
Don't take away my hope that Claudio turned babyface.
That's what I'm here for.
Way of, this is his way of aligning with Moxie and Danielson. Was I going to add? Oh, and then we had Samoa Joe giving the handshake to MJF. Was that a Brock Lesnar, Cody Rhodes moment? You know, this show was bookended by handshakes after major title matches. What do you make of that, Javier?
Yeah, it's another sign of respect where, in this case, it's Samoa Joe, the veteran who's, you know, giving, you know, saying, hey, you know, you, particularly since the storyline's been about how Joe disrespected him and doesn't see him, you know, as someone on his level, in the end that he fought back. And, I mean, we're going to go ahead and set aside how MJ had to cheat his ass off to win, but setting that aside, you arrived and you kept fighting back, even though, you know, granted, he had to cheat to win.
Yeah, I want to table that as a talking point as we get a little deeper here into the show. The lead babyface champion winning through cheating, and everyone is happy about it. Are we okay with that? Because it fits his character. We'll get into that. I want to compliment Samoa Joe, though. I loved his promo. It wasn't super fancy. He wasn't going for social media buzz or cleverness. It was just staring at that camera, delivering a message to MJF, and then the match itself. I mean, you know, Samoa Joe to me is someone who deserved a better build for this moment. Wrestling on national television on the A Show in New York in a stadium for the championship, and they did a good job with the time they had and the, you know, the awkwardness of ROH and Joe sort of being a mainstay there more than in the AW ecosystem. But the, you know, Joe's promos are great and all that. But to me, like my feeling coming out of this is Joe's had a good career, like a really good career. I mean, great. He can be proud of what he did in ROH for sure. Proud of what he did in TNA, some classics with AJ Styles, Kurt Angle, so many others, you know, a solid run in NXT and WWE, even with a lot of mileage on him. I'm so happy he's able to be featured in the way that I think he should have been his entire career, consistently as a world title level main event act, doing this type of promo and this type of match. I'm glad in 2023 in New York in this setting he got it. I wish he had a slightly better storyline support for it to build up so it felt a little more special and not so much just a match that's a backdrop to the drama with Roderick Strong and Adam Cole. But Joe's had a good career, but this match and that promo and everything just convinced me he could have been so much more in better hands with you know, promoters and bookers who believed in him, or if he just went through the WWE system and Vince McMahon, you know, fell in love with him and turned him into a megastar. I don't want it to seem bittersweet. I mean, this was a really nice match from Joe, and I don't want to take away from what this moment was, but it did make me feel kind of bad that he didn't have more moments like this in his career. Again, it's not a career to be ashamed of or anything. It's been a really good career, but he could have been more, Javier.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. He's always been between someone who's been underutilized and the times he has been utilized at a high level, like, you know, I would say this is, it's basically he's taken for granted because he puts a performance like this and like how he's definitely has helped out, you know, post the whole Punk stuff. And, you know, so Joe basically, you know, he's someone that he has this kind of event, and you're like, man, where, you know, why haven't we used him more often? You know, I think that's like what kind of his entire thing, his entire legacy is. Why, you know, because I mean, the work that he did for this match, he made MJF look, you know, amazing, because he destroyed him. He made him look, you know, you felt sympathy for the devil, to, you know, go ahead and play into MJF's catchphrase. You know, so I he just, it's just the small stuff that he does. I think he's like one of the more professional wrestlers. I'm not saying, you know, in the word professional, as you know, it's aside from wrestling, he's basically like someone you want on your roster. I feel like over on Impact, Eddie Edwards is kind of like that, the kind of person that you can rely on, because you know he's going to be there in times of stress and in times, you know, when you need to, you know, pull in case of an emergency. The sad thing is that that means that you take him for granted and don't actually give him the ball to run with.
Yes, agree. Okay, let's pause. Let's introduce the show, introduce ourselves, and then we'll get to our first call from New York. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, September 20th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show. I've been covering professional wrestling for over 35 years, started the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, launched PWTorch.com, and now host a bunch of podcasts throughout the week, every week, some free, some VIP. PWTorch.com/GoVIP gives you information on our full lineup of VIP exclusive shows. We are here talking AEW Dynamite, Grand Slam, Phase 1. Phase 2 is Friday, airs Friday, on Ramp, to our special episode of Rampage. The other voice you hear is Javier Machado. He's a PW Torch contributor. He co-hosts a number of shows with me, usually WWE-related, so it's great to have him here to talk some AEW. And he contributes to our website, pwtorch.com, including New Japan coverage, and is a host of the New Japan Pride podcast, a VIP exclusive focused primarily on New Japan. Javier, welcome to the co-host chair on a Wednesday night.
Hey, Wade, always glad to join you on these things. Did you mention the primers, by the way? Because I'm particularly proud of those.
No, I didn't. I was not exhaustive in the list of things you do. That is, you should be proud. And they are a appointment reading for me as I try to refresh myself on things that I might not be thinking about going into the shows. And everyone should check them out at pwtorch.com, especially after the pay-per-view is over. You should go and see how accurate Javier was.
That part you can skip.
Yes. Great to have you here. Let's give out the phone number and email for anyone who wants to contribute to the show. If you're live streaming us here on Wednesday night at WadeKellerPostShow.com. The number to call is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. That's WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. All right, let's go to our first call here from 646. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. You are on. We can hear you. Sounds like you're still at the venue.
Yeah,
hello. Well,
so it's the first time I'm at AEW, so I had to call.
We can hear you a little, but not very well. Is there a way you can move to a better setup? Maybe you're Bluetoothing?
Yeah, I'm going to switch. Hold on.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Hello?
Hey, that is better. Yeah, go ahead, state your name.
That's better?
Yeah, we can hear you better. Yep.
Okay. So I'm here at the show. It was great. Great show. Any questions from me?
Well, first, what's your name? We still haven't caught it because of the background noise.
Oh, sorry. It's Chris from New York.
Hey, Chris. Good to talk to you. Great. You're having a great time, and I heard you say it's your first AEW show?
Yeah, live show, yes. I watch every week. Yep. I listen to your show every year, every show. I just never get a chance to watch live, so I never call in. But this is my officially third time calling in.
Well, great. Well, thank you for calling in. Well, I'll just ask you this. We'll start with a rather standard question, but I'm curious to know. Who do you think got the biggest star reactions of the night? Who got the biggest pops of the night? You can include Rampage ring introductions and matches, but we'll give people a spoiler warning before we get into results. But in terms of who was most over, who got the biggest crowd pops, who jumps out as top tier?
Definitely MJF 1 and Eddie Kingston number 2.
I'm not surprised
MJF
by that. Javier, are you?
No, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Chris, by the way,
hello, Javier. Yeah. I never called when you were on, so.
Good to talk to you.
Chris, is it – oh, I haven't lived in New York. Is it okay to be both a Mets fan and a Yankee fan and a Jets fan and a Giants and a Bills fan? Like, he was just plastered with every New York team. Does that just make everybody resent him, or is it okay? You have to choose sides.
I mean, most people choose sides. To me, it was just cool to see the logo as the Mets, because the Mets stadium is across the street from here, so it makes the most sense.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm sure if he would have came out like Yankees, I'm sure he might have been booed, because of the fact that we're in Queens and not the Bronx.
Yeah.
So I think he did that on purpose, because it was Queens.
Yeah. He's savvy. He knows how to play that. Javier, let me throw to you for a question for Chris.
How was the crowd? Because while it looked to me, it looked like it was raucous, it didn't always feel like it came across on the screen like how I would like, you know, like a crazy crowd to come out. Because it seemed like this, particularly when Eddie Kingston won, like the crowd was going nuts. But how was the crowd overall throughout the entire night? Were they high energy the entire night or what?
Pretty high. I wouldn't say as high as Eddie Kingston. Like, that was, once he came out, it was just like everyone was excited. Everything calmed down, but everyone was still like, I'll say for sure about 80% was the crowd. The crowd was pretty full, which I was excited. I was nervous that not no one was going to show up. So there was a lot of people, and it was pretty loud. So I'll say that much.
Yeah, WrestleTix had tickets distributed at about 9,500 as of this morning. The building was set up for 11,000 and change. So they might have had some, you know, good walk-up. Last year, the count was 13,300, so they probably were a couple thousand under that, barring some sort of crazy walk-up. But it looked to you that most of the seats that were not tarped off or cut off by the staging were filled. It didn't feel sparse or big empty sections.
No, just the top was sparse. Like, I was in the 300s, so the opposite of me was pretty sparse. But my side was full, and the bottom was pretty full. It was like there was like two little areas in the bottom that were tarped off. That's it.
Interesting. Okay. Was there a low point in the show where the wrestlers lost the crowd at all? Either because, I mean, we know the crowd was booing the ref not counting Moxley's shoulders down, and that was awkward, and, you know, it was a botched spot with Jericho, Guevara, that kind of thing. So you can include that too, but also, was there a match, either Dynamite or Rampage, where the crowd just seemed like, okay, this is our chance to catch our breath?
No, I wouldn't say not really. I mean, I'll say a couple people got up for the Saraya match, but everyone got, you know, into it towards the end. But other than that, no, even Rampage, the few matches that they filmed a couple matches before Dynamite, and then the rest are happening now. So even then, people were just excited because they don't come to New York often. So it's like, they're here, you know? It's not like every other weekend like they do Chicago or something.
Yeah. So, Toni Storm, you mentioned the women's match. How over was she? Like, how did the crowd react to her? She seems to have, like, this cult following. People who are into her are really into her. Did it come across like this is an emerging act, an emerging star in AEW?
You're talking about Toni Storm, right?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah. I mean, when she came out, people were, you know, excited to see her. I felt like Saraya got a little more cheers, like more fan reaction. But, yeah, I would say that.
How was the heat for Don Callis, and did it seem like fans were ready to cheer Jericho and boo Guevara the way in the flow of the storyline directed them?
Oh, yeah. Once he low-pulled Jericho, he got massively. They were cheering him when he first came out. And the way I felt was most people were hoping that they would win, but the fact that, you know, he betrayed Jericho at the end, everyone booed him. And then when Don Callis came out, was a bigger reaction. Like, it was a bigger boo. But just him low-blowing him got a reaction. So they got what they were looking for.
Yeah. Javier, anything else you want to ask about Dynamite?
You said this was your first live attendance?
Yes.
Yeah, so anything surprising being at the venue?
Surprising? The arena's awesome. I've never been to this arena at all. When I got in, everything looked awesome. And also, I'll talk about the merch after, but it was awesome, big. My seat, I paid $35 for my ticket. I know you usually ask $35. I was in section 325. So the view is awesome. Like, you would think, you know, some arenas, when you're up top, it's hard to see. I felt like everything was clear. Everything was good. It's surprising. I don't know. I can't really say surprising. I guess everything looks a little smaller. Like, I felt like the ramp was small. I felt like watching it on TV, the ramp would be longer. I don't know. That's one thing I know. Sure.
Did Tony Khan come out and talk to you guys?
Yeah, he came. Oh, yeah, he came out a couple of times. So right after the show, well, right before Rampage, he came out with Daniel Garcia, and Daniel Garcia wanted him to do the dance he does, and he got him to do it. It was pretty hilarious.
God.
Yeah, it was
wow.
Very crazy, is what you would call it.
What
at first, and then he went for it
yeah.
and did it.
What did Tony have to say?
He just thanked everyone. He said that you're the best and awesome to see us and glad that you're there. And, pretty much also after the MJF match, MJF got on the mic and he said, he pretty much said almost the same thing. Like, thanks for coming out. You know, you guys are the best. And we're going to come here year after year after year. He's basically saying they're going to keep coming every year. And that he's,
yeah.
you know, saying that we're going to keep giving you guys the best wrestling. And, you know, thanks for coming, basically.
Cool. Well, let's talk about Rampage with a proper spoiler alert to anybody listening who wants to be surprised or not know too much before Friday night. Talk to us about the order they tape things in and the results of the matches.
Okay, so before Dynamite at 7:30 they started. So the first match was Santana versus one of the Iron Savages. I don't know which one, but Santana won that match. It's kind of cool. And then the second match they filmed was the six-man tag with Chris Statlander, Orange Cassidy, and Hook. And they went over. Hook put the choke on one person, and Orange Cassidy got the Orange Punch on someone else, and they won. They faced them with Daddy Magic and Cool Hand and Anna Jay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that match was good. And then after Dynamite, the first match that they filmed now was the tag team with Christian and Luchasaurus. I didn't get to watch it because I'm here. I don't know what's going on. Right
Sorry
now.
About
I walked
that.
Out, but that's pretty much. So the next, I think the next two matches should be the six-man title matches. But I'll probably go back in
yeah.
and see it.
Yeah, and then Starks Danielson and Andrade J. White. Did you mention those matches yet?
Oh, no. They didn't show those.
So you got a lot more to go.
They only saw the first two, and then I saw a little bit of the Christian Cage match while I was waiting to get on the phone.
Yep. Well, cool. Well, is there anything else that you want to add? Because I don't want to hold you away from the action any longer, too.
No, the merch stand. So there was two. There was one outside the building and one on my level. I mean, there might be more, but I know everyone talks about the merch. Not that crazy. They had a New York City Dynamite shirt. They had the Better Than You Bay Bay Matt shirt. They had some action figures. They had the title belts. They had some. They had the cardboard cut out of Jay White, right? That's the cardboard that they bring up. Yeah, and crazy enough, it's like 1 foot tall, and it's like $40. So ridiculous. I saw a few people bought it. I thought that was way overpriced, but you know.
Yeah. Well, Chris, if you want to check to see if we're still on the air after the show is over, after the tapings are over, you can. If not, if you want to email us quick results, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com, from your phone, it'd be nice to update people as the show goes on, or at least at the end of the show here. We'll give people a spoiler warning and let people know the results. I mean, I'm sure they'll get out there in various ways, but it'd be great to get them in a timely way from you, if it's convenient for you from your seat.
Yeah, no problem. I might call back. I'll see how I feel. But,
okay.
Pretty much.
Yep. All right. No pressure. Thanks. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Great talking to you. Call again.
All right. I will.
Excellent. All right. Our number is 347-215-8558. If you call push 1, that'll flag you on our switchboards. We know you want to be on the show. You can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. That is also the email to use if you want to be an on-site correspondent like Chris just was. You can email me, put the name of the city in the subject line, and let us know that you want to be on the show, or that you are going, that you're attending a show and want to be the on-site correspondent, I should say. All right, let's go first or next up to area code 312, and then Ian from Tennessee is on deck. So Ian, hold tight. 312, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Eric Kroll calling from Chicago, Illinois, and I demand that my entrance music be played, if you would, for Javier whenever he calls in. So I'll
Eric, you got to send me some music requests. That has to be non-commercial and original, which limits you a bit.
Certainly I'd find something better than the theme song for The Fix, which is the best podcast in wrestling, with the worst music in the history of any podcast anywhere ever.
That is so not true. It's so perfect for the show.
The part about The Fix being the best podcast? Wait, don't understand.
The music is so perfect. Anyway, go ahead, Eric.
Do you think Tony Khan would pay for you to license Bad to the Bone by George Thorogood for me? Because I'd love that to be my theme song. Maybe Mikey Ruckus can do a Muzak version of it like he does for FTR and all those other AEW themes. But seriously, I was calling mostly to make fun of Javier. After you gave him – you put Javier over in his introduction so incredibly well, and then he has the gall to complain that you plug his thing. What's up with that, Javier? Can you explain that?
I enjoy the primers. I put a lot of thought and effort into those, more than I probably should. That's it.
Well, you know, Wade. I'm sure Wade's making up for it by paying you a king's ransom for those primers. So that's okay.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Eric, have you been drinking?
I have not been drinking. Totally sober.
Oh wow!
Shot out of a cannon though.
Wow.
So no, seriously, I was really calling, other than to make fun of Wade and Javier, I was calling to say how great Samoa Joe is. He was so unbelievable in that main event. Everybody knew he wasn't winning the title. They're not going to put the title on a broken down 40-something-year-old guy who, you know, has never really gotten his glory, as you guys have correctly noted. And yet, I bit in that match. He hit that muscle buster, and I thought, holy F, everything else that happened, I thought, holy F, he's going to do it. They're gonna take the belt off MJF, and that, of course, didn't happen. But just really calling to praise MJF, Samoa Joe, and what do you guys think? Samoa Joe, should they have put the belt on him?
I got your text about it, You were convinced, and it didn't take Excalibur, you know, selling the idea for you to be – convinced isn't the word, but, you know, buying into near falls and thinking maybe this would – that Joe would win. And, you know, you had moving parts with Adam Cole, and that could affect things. You know, where storyline-wise, you could excuse it. There'd be an excuse for MJF losing. Javier, watching the match, do you think they one, maximized the potential drama of a title change within the parameters of the story and, you know, the MJF character and trajectory and Samoa Joe? And, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to think Joe's not going to be champion just based on, you know, how things are booked. But did they pull you in like they did Eric, where you were going, maybe, maybe, I'm not going to rule it out?
Well, I mean, the only not for the most part, the only thing that, like, I'm talking about added a 0.001% chance was someone reported something about that MJF might be legit hurt and working through an injury. And it's like, okay, well, maybe there's a way to get it off of him if he couldn't work. But, you know, but I'm talking about that was like barely a blip on that. As a matter of fact, I think that the one thing that hurt the match a little bit for me is when MJF, after the brutal beating that he took, kicking out of the muscle buster, it's probably my least favorite thing in most wrestling. You know, New Japan does it a few times too. That's a situation where they did it earlier in the match, where I would much prefer the person to be close to the rope and, you know, use the rope to get out of it, particularly when you're taking a person's finisher, particularly when it's a finisher that is, you know, fairly well protected like the muscle buster is. So that took me a little bit out of the match, where it's like, okay, now I'm watching, you know, a performance as opposed to like what to me was a real fight to that point. You know, after that, all the cheating started, you know, happening. So at that point, I'm going to say went off the rails. I don't mean it negatively necessarily. I was not that fond of that moment. And I was never really told, you know, convinced that there was going to be a title change. So,
Eric, how do you feel about a babyface world champion cheating as much as MJF is? Is it it's required because, you know, he's a scumbag and that's his character, and if he wasn't, it wouldn't seem like it's really MJF, and it's a fine exception? Or is it going to be a little much if the only way or the main way he's winning his matches as a babyface is you know, mule kicks and chains and trying to get away with hitting people with rings?
Well, the finish using the what was that, a piece of tape that he used to choke Joe out, that was a callback to the first MJF Punk match in February 22, 2022 that I saw in Chicago at the smaller Wintrust Arena, where they had that long match on television that they had a restart, right? I think, like, there was a false finish in the middle. And Punk, you know, essentially lost to MJF twice in that match. And it fits his character, right? I'm your scumbag. Like, I haven't really changed, but you're just cheering me now, so I'm your scumbag. And I guess that makes sense. It's not traditional babyface storytelling, which is weird because MJF is playing an 80s babyface, right? I mean, with the you know, pre-planned goofy things like the kangaroo kick. You know, it's almost some of it's almost Hogan-esque. Although MJF sold a hell of a lot more in this match for Joe, who took almost all of it than Hogan ever did for anyone in the U.S. Anyway. So yeah, I guess it's weird. I do wonder if, you know, coming out of this, you got Wrestle Dream in what, 11 days. What are the, you know, what's MJF's match? They seem to blow off the Joe thing when he shook his hand. If Joe would have attacked him after the match or attacked both of them and beat them both down, you could run that match back, especially given how well it got over. But I don't think they're going to do that. My guess is they're going to do another goofy comedy tag match with the Kingdom versus MJF and Cole for the ROH tag titles, assuming the Kingdom wins whatever they're doing on Rampage to determine the number one contenders for that. And I think that's disappointing. I think this will be the second pay-per-view in a row where they had a big show right before, you know, 7 days in the case of All In and All Out, and then 11 days in this case, where they're going to do a tag team match, right, with the world champ instead of a world title match. And I think that's kind of cheap. I don't, you know, I think your world title should be defended on your big shows, if at all possible. I do also wonder, though, if they have to change plans, because did it seem to you guys like Adam Cole got injured tonight? Like, he was limping around. Like, he
I thought it when he Yeah, I did think of that because I when he leapt off the ramp and the way he limped around the thing, I'm like, uh-oh. So yeah, that did strike me.
Yeah, Wade, did you notice that at all?
I haven't heard anything, and there'd be no reason for him to make up that he's injured. I mean, it didn't factor into anything.
Right.
I mean, he went through with what he had to do. So yeah, I mean, hopefully that doesn't screw things up. For whatever, you know, the paces of how they want to tell this story.
Yeah.
Look, pause for a second here, if you can. Javier, same question to you. Just what do you think of MJF in the – I said I'd table it for later at the top of the show, but Eric talked about it. The cheating to win, do we just embrace it and it's, hey, that's his character? Or can it actually, you know, end up being kind of ridiculous if the number one babyface world champ is trying to find every which way to actually cheat instead of winning clean?
Well, I mean, that was Eddie Guerrero's gimmick, and it's something that's seldom used, with good reason, because it's hard to really pull it off. The important thing is that he needs to really be facing, heels, like monster heels, not monster necessarily in size, but monster, like, you know, evil heels, you know, like straight up. You can't do it if he faces, for example, Kenny Omega in a kind of, like, you know, choose who you want to cheer kind of situation. But if he's facing someone who's like a, you know, pure blood heel, it could work, you know, similar in the way that that it worked for Eddie Guerrero. Eddie Guerrero at the time was, you know, mainly dealing with JBL, and, you know, and he was like, you know, everybody hated him. So in a similar situation, it could work. You know, if MJF, I could see, you know, MJF dealing with some of Don Callis's people, who, you know, through Don Callis are going to be despised by the fans. I could see that work because it's like, you know, hey, yeah, he's cheating to win, but, you know, he's our guy.
All right, Eric, back to you.
Yeah, so the Moxley Phoenix match, that one, I don't know if Moxley got his bell rung early on and was never the same, but the match just seemed off. And Moxley looked glassy-eyed, but it's hard to tell because of the way he sells, right? He's sort of naturally Terry Funk-style punch-drunk selling. but obviously something was wrong. So one of two things is probably true. Rick Knox completely blew that finish, or Moxley forgot to kick out of that first pile driver. And so I wondered, have you heard, you know, I know you're doing a recap during the show, so it's hard to do reporting while you're doing it. Do we think Moxley is was concussed? They did address it, right?
Yeah,
when
I mean,
back Excalibur.
Well, yeah, I don't know as of this moment. I think it's peculiar that right away Excalibur and the announcers, even before the bell rang, were talking about Moxley not being himself and all that. There's no way they would have been able to, you know, ascertain for sure that he had a concussion, and they were kind of telling that story early, which makes me think, possibly, if Rey Fénix is going to beat Moxley for that title, they want the story to be Moxley got concussed early as an explanation for losing to Fénix, who has not exactly been portrayed as a top-tier guy. Very exciting wrestler, has great matches with top-tier people, but he hasn't been protected and portrayed in that way. So maybe that's a story they wanted to tell, and the ref screwed up, you know, at the end. But Moxley was pretty much from the beginning trying to tell the story that, yeah, I got my bell rung, and you got the better of me because of it, as opposed to I was at full strength and he got the better of me. That's my working theory right now, not having any insider information at this point. But it's the announcer selling the idea that he was glassy-eyed early in the match. That makes me suspicious it was part of some sort of plan.
Huh. Sort of selling fake injuries, wasn't that on CM Punk's banned moves list that they publicized earlier this summer? I guess he's gone now, so they can go back to doing whatever they want. On the second pile driver, the one he took after the ref didn't, you know, screwed up or whatever the case is, Moxley, if you look at somebody did a slow-mo replay and put it on Twitter, and it looks like Moxley's head hits before Phoenix's legs or knees reach the mat. So that's worth looking at just to see it. It didn't look good. Like, it would be weird if he was selling all throughout this, you know, selling the glassy, I think, throughout the match, wasn't actually hurt, but Rick Knox screwing up the finish caused him to take a second pile driver that actually hurt.
I know. Right?
That would be particularly bittersweet.
That'd be awful.
Deal with.
I mean, one of the reasons I'm not spending – one of the reasons I, on my own, I'm not initiating a ton of discussion on it is I think we're just going to know soon. And so I think our discussions here are going to seem kind of dated pretty quickly once we kind of find out what happened. Because, I mean, I have my – you know, I'm speculating just like you. But I just feel like there's so many an array of possibilities here of what happened, what was supposed to happen. And I kind of figure we'll find out soon, you know. Everything else just feels like guesswork. Although – you know, trying to patch together what happened. I think there's indications like you're observing, but I don't think there's anything conclusive or decisive in terms of what really happened.
Yeah, fair enough. We will probably find out by the morning. And then I guess I would close with, you know, so online, anywhere, but especially wrestling online, Twitter, is a cesspool. It's terrible. It's full of bad faith actors, you know, all the things we dislike about online wrestling discourse, and you saw in the last, you know, yesterday and today, maybe a bunch of reckless speculation that, you know, gets people who don't understand how to determine a real news source from a fake one all excited. You know, and I guess the two leading rumors, based in nothing, as far as I can tell, were Mercedes Moné was going to make her debut and Edge was going to make his debut. And of course, neither of those things happened. In fact, nobody debuted. Rare for a big Tony Khan show, because that's one of his go-to booking moves. But I guess I would just end with a plug for good wrestling news sources such as PWTorch.com. Go VIP.
Thank you, Eric. Yes, we don't normally feed the bad information by disputing it, you know, because it's like, but if we haven't reported it, it's probably, not always, because sometimes there's just information out there, you know, but probably if we haven't reported something, it's probably not going to happen. Now, the only catch is, in this situation that you bring up, if it's not widely distributed or obvious because someone was sloppy about it with the company, it's my policy not to spoil surprises, even if I know or have heard or have a strong hunch. It's a whole different world we live in, but I mean, I don't know why anybody would not want to be surprised if Edge or Mercedes showed up tonight. I mean, it's just like, why do you need to know on social media 12 hours earlier? Is that really a better experience for you? I don't want to know what happened on the season finale of my favorite TV series 12 hours before I watch it. It's so puzzling to me that's an energy is spent trying to find out something ahead of time that if you just sit back and enjoy the damn show, you're going to find out that way. So I'll just caveat that if we don't report it, sometimes it's just, well, you know, we don't want to amplify needless spoilage, because I don't think that's really newsworthy. That, you know, you essentially got a hold of a script and now you're going to just broadcast to everybody what the ending is for something.
Yeah, you can't monetize the clicks though, Wade, which I think is the point of all of the reckless speculation reporting stuff before it happens. I mean, I think it's news. Is it as big a news as so-and-so got fired or so-and-so signed a new contract? No, to your point, it's just spoiling what you're going to get anyway in a few hours. So,
yeah.
If you spent all of your time knocking down bad information on the internet, you would have to clone yourself six times to have any kind of a life.
Yeah.
So you
exactly.
Can get caught in that treadmill. So
but,
thanks
but there's some,
for your good journalism
but
for
there,
30 plus years, Wade.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, there's some YouTubers who got a little extra revenue today from, you know, probably amplifying those things too, and you know and getting you know the trending topic that led to them being at the top of the algorithm. But such is 2023 quote journalism unquote. Eric, thank you. Appreciate the kind words.
Thanks. Take care, guys.
You bet. Eric Kroll's call ended better than it started, Javier.
Yeah, it did.
I said that as I muted him, so he can't. He has no recourse to respond. All right, our number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. If you call, push 1 if you want to be on the show. Got a ton of you listening in. If any of you also, having already called in, want to push 1 to join the conversation, consider yourself invited. Also, Wade Keller podcast at pwtorch.com. is the email if you want to contribute that way. By the way, Greg Parks will be joining me Friday night after SmackDown on the Wake Keller post show. So join us Friday night. Greg making a rare post show appearance, the host of Wrestling Night in America and a Pro Wrestling Torch columnist and VIP podcaster. And SmackDown used to be his old beat for many years. He covered SmackDown Friday nights for the website. So join us then. The flagship is already out this week. Rich Fan joined me yesterday, and we went in-depth on a wide array of topics. So check that out on our Blue Logo Show. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app. Subscribe to this, the Red Logo Show, the post shows, and also the main podcast feed, our Blue Logo Show. All right, Ian in Tennessee, I promised you're next. You are up. Ian, what's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Firstly, Wade, I want to apologize. I think I jinxed our Vikings. They're not starting the season great, but hopefully the season can turn around for us. It's not looking too good right now, but hopefully, like I said, it'll get better. But I was thinking about it while Eric was calling, and I promise I won't be as energetic as he was. But I did notice when you said about Adam Cole. I think it was when he jumped off the stage. He probably just twisted his ankle or something. But do you think it makes Samoa Joe look weak to lose? Because he was probably completely healthy, and you know, MJF has the neck injury. Do you think it makes Joe look weak losing to MJF with a bad neck? It goes back to my opinion on Seth Rollins and Shinsuke. But do you guys think it made MJF look weak? Or make Samoa Joe look weak, losing MJF like that.
So I would say getting choked out. Javier, I thought it was a chain, not a piece of tape. Eric had mentioned he thought it was a piece of tape. Was it a chain?
Was it maybe the tag rope maybe that he got?
I thought the announcer said it was a chain. But anyway, he choked him out with an object that he had to hide from the referee. So you have that. You had the mule kick. I don't think it makes Joe look weak because MJF is a world champion. He never loses. Sometimes he cheats to win. Sometimes he doesn't. But I don't think there's any shame in losing to MJF, period, where it would make you look weak. But you last 18 minutes and overcome Adam Cole distracting the ref and being, you know, choked with a foreign object. I think Joe comes out of this just fine. That's not a concern to me. How about you, Javier?
Yeah. In context of the match, I mean, if you just describe the bullet points, another bullet points, but like the headlines, you could see it that way. But you know, when you see the context of the match, you had all the cheating going on, you had the confusion and stuff like that. Like I said, the only thing that to me was one bridge too far. But this is a personal thing, was the muscle buster that he kicked out of after like getting killed. Yeah. Through a table, you know, that sort of thing. I actually had a bigger issue with what you're talking about the women's match. But I think Samoa Joe is fine. Plus it's, you know, I'd be maybe even more worried if he's going to be like a perennial guy there, but he's not. I'm assuming Joe's going to go back to where he's been like in the mid-card sort of gatekeeperish role.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about it. He does the uranage through the table. He then does the pile driver onto the floor and then the muscle buster. And part of me was thinking he's either going to win or they're going to continue a storyline with MJF and Adam Cole. Where when I saw Adam Cole running down, I thought for like half a minute he was going to grab the towel, Samojo's towel, and throw it in and say MJF's done. Did you guys think that for half a second, or was I probably like the only one that thought, oh, they're going to have a weird storyline where Adam Cole costs MJF the title by like protecting his best friend, and that causes some dissension between MJF and Adam Cole?
That did cross my mind. Javier, go ahead.
No, the other reason that I knew that MJF was for sure going to win was he called it in one of his promos. So he said that the show's going to end with him choking out Joe and the crowd chanting MJF as he passes out. That was a promo that he had cut, so I knew that he was – and since the match started with two attempts at him getting the sleeper in, and then later on in the match tried to get in another one, that was – you know, they signposted that that's how the match was going to finish. So, you know, him grabbing the chain – they said it was either the wrist tape or the chain on commentary. At that point, it's like, okay, well, that was the finish because that was called, you know, by MJF in one of the promos.
Ian, go ahead.
So my other question is, who do you see MJF? Do you see MJF defending the world title at WrestleDream? Do you think they bank on the Danielson, Zack Sabre Jr. match? Do you think, like what Eric said, do you think they'll just do the tag title match like they did All Out against, I would imagine it's going to be Roddy's friends that win the match, but if MJF does defend the title, who do you see him defending it against at WrestleDream?
Yeah, I don't think WrestleDream needs MJF on top. It's not that kind of pay-per-view. I don't think the stakes are high. I don't think they would rush a match that they would feature on one of their prime pay-per-views on a WrestleDream. It just feels like more of a different kind of show than one where you need MJF on top. Although, yeah, I mean, you don't want to do that too often, but you can do the tag title match. That's a storyline people are interested in. And honestly, if they do a tag title defense, I think fans will be as into that as they would a singles world title match that they just sort of rush into on short notice. Javier, what do you think the options are? What do you think they're going to do?
Yeah, I do think it's most likely the RH title defense is most likely what they're going to end up doing. Further along, you know, something between probably Roderick and MJF, maybe that might be your next big Dynamite, you know, in-between pay-per-view match, Strong and MJF maybe, you know, to lead to – I'm pretty sure the next big pay-per-view would likely finally be the Adam Cole-MJF.
Ian, how's that sound?
I mean, it sounds good, you know. I like how they're giving MJF, like, time off. I love his backstage promos where he's like, am I angry that I'm missing time? No, I'm going to go relax and just do all that. But my final question is the Sammy Guevara heel turn. I personally am a huge fan of it. I like it. It's giving Sammy more to do.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, you know, Jericho keeps going heel face, but where do you see the storyline going? Do you see Danny Garcia joining the Don Callis team and Jericho has to go do like a tag match of Full Gear? Where do you see the storyline going with Jericho and Don Callis?
Yeah, you know, I'm really glad you brought that up. That was a show that was mostly about the matches and the wrestling and the outcomes. But the angle after that match is significant. Don Callis now has another member of the Don Callis family, apparently, although, you know, we sort of said, well, you'll find out on, what was it, Rampage or Collision? I think Rampage.
It was Rampage.
And, yeah, and then you got the Danny Garcia, you know, teaser. The mystery is, you know, how does he feel? His body language, the way he kind of, you know, looked at Don Callis and then looked at Guevara, kind of came across as, he doesn't want to join them, but that, you know, also could be a red herring. Javier, where do you think this is going? And really, what do you think about Guevara? Like, I mean, I'm for Guevara being heel. I think he's better heel than a baby face. He seems like a nice enough guy. He's just not interesting when he's being nice. So he's much more interesting when he's being cocky and leaning hard into that. So I like him as a heel. I just think they need to, commit in some way where they have to keep their promise to not turn him for the next 4 years. Because as Ian said, I mean, there's just been too much of it. And the next turn is going to mean so little unless he stays heel for years. What do you think about all that, Javier?
Yeah, I'm glad that they're going to finally stick with the direction with Sammy. I think I'm a little bit higher as him being a potential baby, you know, let me put that in actual sentence, correct sentence structure. I think that there's more potential in him as a babyface. He's just, he'll say something likely, you know, online that's going to piss everybody off and then turn him. So, I mean, yeah. He's going to do something, you know, in that respect. So it is safer to have him as a heel. It's safer to have him in a situation where you're not, you know, his style. And I mean, and he's charismatic. So that charisma and his wrestling style does not babyface him up by teaming him up with someone like Callis. So I do like that. I do hope that they don't make him like second fiddle to Callis. And they make him more like on an even playing field because, you know, he's been second fiddle to Jericho all along, and I'd like to see him, you know, have, you know, see it, make it seem like he's taking a step forward where he's working with Callis, not for Callis, you know, basically. So, so that's my thoughts on Sammy. Was there another question there or?
Oh, Garcia.
Oh yeah. And the Garcia because the Garcia thing is interesting because he seemed to be, like one of the, and I dig this. It's like a game that you could do with writing, in storytelling, where he was, you know, early on when the Jericho Appreciation Society collapsed, it was Sammy Guevara who was the most outspoken, no, I'm still with Jericho guy, with Garcia being like, no, you know, I'm done with this. But then him seeing Sammy do a completely 180 likely brings Daniel Garcia like, hey, you know, I have my issues with Jericho, but I didn't do him dirty like Sammy did. And then bring Garcia closer to Jericho. Plus we've seen, you know, Garcia already, you know, turned down Don Callis. And I think the idea is that we're going to head into a feud between Sammy and Garcia as the first big feud. And then, you know, you'd have tag team with Takeshita and Jericho, you know, being the ones that match up, and Garcia and Sammy being the ones that match up underneath them.
All right, Ian, back to you. Anything you want to respond to there?
You know, I'm curious if they're going to tie in the Kenny Omega with Jericho and maybe have, like, the enemy of my enemy, of my friend, because I don't think Jericho and Kenny got along storyline-wise, but I'm very intrigued. I think it was a very solid episode of Dynamite. You know, I was very surprised because I didn't see the Moxley get hurt until the audio in my phone was like, oh, then I hear booing, and I was like, oh, it's probably Blackpool Combat Club, and then I see Phoenix was doing the move again. But I did just see online that a fan took a picture of Tony Khan was outside John Moxley's trailer with Renee and Claudio and Wheeler, so I guess that's a good sign that and someone else said that Moxley was able to walk out of the ring on his own power, so I hope it's nothing bad, but I was very surprised to see Phoenix win the title, so I guess they must have called an audible if Moxley was really hurt.
Yeah, so I got a little reporting on that, Moxley did suffer what has been diagnosed as a concussion, not a major concussion, but he did get hurt early in the match, and it did affect his performance in the match. And I'm trying to get clarification on this, but it would make sense given the referee in not counting the third count that Moxley called the audible for Phoenix to go over because he didn't know how hurt he was. And that would explain why the ref was hesitant to count that third pin, because it would have been an unplanned title change based on what the ref was told before the match, and he must have not gotten the memo of the changed finish mid-match. And, of course, if Moxley was concussed, he might not have been communicating clearly or thought he did and didn't and all that. So I'm hearing some of that through some, you know, messaging on my phone, and I need to do a little bit more reporting to get more clarity. But that seems to be what the case was. But Moxley's not, like, at a hospital or anything like that. And that sounds like, Ian, you've got confirmation on that. It just sounds like he got diagnosed backstage, but not in a way that will probably lead to any kind of serious time off.
Yeah, it's very intriguing that Phoenix has the belt, and now I'm sure everyone's like, oh, well, I wonder how that's going to go. Are they going to give the belt back to Cassidy maybe? But I think that kind of ruins the whole all-out main event of Moxley beating Cassidy and giving Cassidy the time off. So, very, very interested to see where it goes with Phoenix and with the international title.
Ian, great hearing from you, as always. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Yep, thank you. Take care.
Let me touch on something that Ian had said. The end game of this whole Callis storyline is basically Jericho and Omega teaming up AEW, as they claim, and not totally off base, was, you know, one of the impetus for the creation of AEW was that Kenny Omega Jericho match, and which was facilitated through Don Callis, and it was the idea was that it was a Winnipeg guy versus a Winnipeg guy put together by a Winnipeg guy. So that was them as opponents. The end game of this whole thing is to see Kenny and Omega, who are rivals, take on Don Callis' group, Takeshita and maybe Sammy, likely.
Yeah. Good. All right. Chris from New York, our on-site correspondent, looks like he's back online. I want to just check to see if he wants to be brought on. Chris, do you want to update us? Did you indicate that on the switchboard?
Hello?
Yeah. Hey, Chris.
Hello, you hear me?
Yeah, we sure can. Yep. Hey, Chris.
Hello?
Yep. Hey, Chris. We can hear you. You're still at the show, or did the show end?
You hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Oh, yeah. I'm still here.
Can you hear us?
The first thing I saw when I got back was Jericho getting beat up by Guevara and Takeshita. So I'm guessing, I guess the reveal happened. I didn't get a chance on why Sammy did it. I missed that part. But someone came to save Jericho, and you guys kind of spoiled it yourselves. It was Kenny Omega. When I was listening the whole time, so I heard, I was like, oh, shit, they said it before I did. I was waiting to tell you. But, yeah, it was Kenny Omega. He came out to save him.
Oh, perfect. That's just perfect, yeah.
So the match after that was the ROH Trios match, which it was all right. I feel like people weren't really reacting. Another thing is no one really left, which was surprising. I would say maybe 5% of people left. It's still pretty crowded, which is good. So with the Trios match, the Young Bucks and Anna Page won titles, which was pretty cool.
Oh, wow.
And right now, Sky Blue is having her match. I guess she lost. I didn't really get to see the ending of that match, but Julia Hart is choking her out.
Cool. Nice getting these updates.
Oh, it's a real coming out. Yeah, so that's pretty much what's going on. I was hoping to talk to you guys before you end your show, because I didn't want to, you know, wait too long.
Well,
I'm glad you got back.
Well, if you're still on hold, or if you push one again to unplug yourself, and then if you want to be back on, push one. We're gonna read some emails and hit some other topics, so maybe we'll check back in with you one more time if you stay at the show.
Yeah, I'm gonna try. I think there's two more matches left. There should be the claim match and then the number one contenders for the tag titles. So we'll see how those go.
Yeah,
I'll try to call back in. I mean,
when you're ready for us.
All right.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, just push one. Just push one again when you want to be on the show. Push one to unplug yourself now.
All right, I will. Thank you.
Cool. All right, there we go. It's not too often that, you know, there's a long taping after the TV show we cover, Javier. So it's kind of fun getting these updates as we go from a correspondent in the building. All right, so if you want to call or push one, if you've already called, you still can, 347-215-8558. I do want to shift to some emails first, though. Let's see. JB has 10 questions, so I'm going to go to him later. we'll go to Zach in Texas. Gentlemen, what a show! AEW really delivered when they needed to tonight with Grand Slam. From top to bottom, the show was great. If you didn't feel something when Eddie finally won the big one, check your pulse and call 911 because I think your heart might have stopped. Eddie finished his story before Cody, and that brings me no shortage of joy. Jericho hit the best code breaker of his life in the finish of his match. And the post-match, not it wasn't bad, but in the post-match to HBK Jericho from WrestleMania 19 was perfect. Mox and Phoenix was great up until the messy finish. I hope Mox is okay. I was relieved to hear he left on his own power. The women's match was thoroughly entertaining. Toni Storm continues to do tremendous work, the best of her career. I convinced myself that Mercedes Moné was going to debut, so I was disappointed. I'll interrupt. Javier, let's just keep reporting Edge and Moné are going to show up over and over again, because then it will be a surprise when it happens, because we won't believe anybody crying wolf on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will not report it, though, because I want credibility. I had convinced myself that Mercedes was going to debut, so I was disappointed. But the MJF homage to Bret, the Bret Hart video, brought me back. I thought that was a Mean Joe Green 1979, Have a Coke and a Smile throwback.
I thought the same thing. I was thinking, because I know it was a throwback to something, and it did feel like the Mean Joe Green one.
Yep, the kid in the back. And God, I haven't seen that forever, but that was a great commercial. The main event was fantastic. MJF is the best babyface in professional wrestling, and it's not really that close. By the way, has anyone ever choked out Samoa Joe before? I appreciated the handshake at the end. It was Joe's way of saying, game, recognize this game. Totally agree with that. Is MJF the best babyface today in wrestling? Javier.
Probably not. I got to think about it, but probably not.
Yeah. I mean, there's Cody, for one.
I was thinking him, but I do think that they need to warm him up. He's getting kind of cold.
Maybe, it's so personal taste. We don't have to go down.
Yeah.
Anything else?
The thing about, you know, I might as well touch upon this now. The thing about, like, you know, because a while back somebody sent a letter into The Fix where, you know, they basically compared the story of Adam Cole and MJF as it being the same as the friendship storyline that was going on in the Bloodlines and why the two of them are seen different. Todd's take was that, oh, no, they're not the same. But no, both stories are very similar, you know, in terms of like the whole friendship angle, because the that's what the Adam Cole MJF thing has been from the beginning. The thing is that you could tell the same story in two different ways. And the thing is that the Bloodline storyline is like you're watching an HBO drama, while the way they're telling the Adam Cole MJF story is you watching a similar story being played off on the CW. You know, so obviously, you know, one is prestige format, one is kind of like just popcorn, you know, turn off your brain and enjoy it kind of thing. And, you know, I liked the CW stuff. So I do like some aspects of the MJF Cole story dynamic. It's just, you know, whether it's good for business, whether, you know, you're going to get more out of an HBO prestige versus a CW show, you're probably going to get more out of an HBO prestige.
All right, well put. We'll go to David Wolf next, Washington, D.C. Hey, Wade and Javier. Hi, Wade and Javier. It looked to me like Jon Moxley was concussed, landing on his head when Phoenix flew onto him before the match officially started. I believe that is actually true. Phoenix was worried and reached for Mox's hand to see whether Mox responded. I believe the match should have been stopped right then, and if something happened later to exacerbate Mox's possible head injury, there will again be questions concerning AEW and safety issues. I'm wondering whether Phoenix was even booked to win the match or whether an audible was called, the latter of which would explain the ref pulling his third count. It also appears Adam Cole injured his knee, taking an unnecessary leap while running to the ring during the main event. Yeah, I mean, I haven't gotten word on Cole's injury, but God, you hope it's not something that's going to throw off his ability to work matches. What a shame that would be. I have heard even further clarification that, yeah, Mox was supposed to win, Javier, and Mox made the call for Phoenix to go over. And so, I mean, credit to David Wolf for being spot on with his observations there. Mox got concussed before the bell. What do you think about the fact that maybe the match should have been stopped? I mean, if the plan wasn't to tell the story of concussions and he was exhibiting those legit signs, and the way is he was kind of sitting up a little bit with his arms locked, you know, that's a sign of a concussion, I believe. So why are there not people recognizing that? And if nothing else, just, well, I mean, you can't really rearrange the match order because it was the, well, yeah, you could. If you could have done the women's match and then decided to go back to Moxley and Ray later and put a rampage match on after the women's match. And then if Mox was cleared, have, you know, continue the match on Rampage on Friday. I mean, there are things you could have done, and you are taking, you know, perhaps your top guy in the company. You know, I mean, it could be MJF, you know, you can make your case about various people, but putting them more at risk. Javier, how do you feel about that? Is this another controversy?
They're in the spirit of the moment. I can't really talk about that, because I don't know how the doctors are trained to spot this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if, you know, they saw it, if they have a replay that shows it. There was a spot where, you know, because, yeah, there was, you know, what you brought up on commentary said, you know, it it makes sense in the structure of the match that this is how, you know, Phoenix is going to get the, you know, a head start on Moxley is with the, you know, with the leap and, you know, Moxley's out of for the beginning. That is how Moxley sells. And then there was a spot like after that where he just uncorked one on Rey Fénix, and they on commentary they said, he goes, oh, you know, was Moxley just playing possum? So all that seemed to be part of the story, and you know,
yeah.
You could be watching something, and I think that's part of that, you know, the thing, you know, don't sell like real injuries is
yeah.
could be part of that maybe, like, you know, the you might be confusing the doctors too.
That's exactly right. Yep.
You know, so. You know, and if Moxley decided not to say anything and take himself out of it, knowing that he had a concussion at that point, that's then on him, you know, not necessarily
yeah.
on the doctor. So we don't know. I mean, there's just way too many. I'm not going to speculate because we don't know what we don't know. So, you know, so yeah.
Yes. No, well put. All right. But yeah, good work, David. I think you observed, astutely what was happening there. All right. JB in Jacksonville's up next. He goes, hey, Wade and Javier, before I begin, I'll say I have to make a quick trip to Miami on Friday. And every time I tell someone I'm going down to Miami, I reflexively start humming Javier's theme for an hour. So thanks for that, Javier. You had nothing to do with it. That's the thing. You just you just ended up with it. You're getting blamed. You're getting blamed for it. Yeah. It is catchy.
I got to be on more often in the after post shows, so it's been a while. See, how did you know I was fishing for that?
Unlike Sean from Tennessee, as who the only caller with a jingle, who you know his jingle is like twice as long, and you know Sean insisted on a much longer jingle than yours, pretty much double length. All right. So back to the email here. This is JB in Jacksonville. I really liked Dynamite. Thought it was a really fun show. With that said, it sure would be nice to see Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and Hangman Page on what they consistently call the biggest Dynamite of the year. If the Elite are the closest faction AEW has in terms of prestige to the Bloodline, it's yet another week I tune in as a huge Kenny fan and wait, and he's just MIA. Kenny put Grand Slam on the map with Danielson, who also had the night off, 2 years ago. It crossed my mind, you know, that it, you know, the lead, you know, you're watching the show and they're not part of the show that's going to be seen by a lot more people than Friday's Rampage, where they will appear. Javier, is it happenstance or should, and it's fine, or do you look at this and go, God, they should have found a way to get them on the show? I look at the card and I don't think they made the wrong call. Like, specifically speaking, I don't think there's a match that you remove to put an ROH six-man title match on the line. And Kenny is only involved in an angle. So I get it, but it's not ideal. And I'd like to see them make up for it in other ways. It feels like one of the things that AEW can do to improve their product and the perception of the star power depth is get people invested in Kenny in the box, you know, more than they have been. But I don't know if Kenny had it. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I didn't miss a promo from the Bucks, right, to promote the match on Rampage?
No, that's true. They could have done that.
That was, you know, because they did that with Christian and Luchasaurus. So
yeah.
It would have taken you 5 seconds to do, you know,
yeah.
just you know.
Yeah.
That I'm surprised by. You know, I don't need them on the actual card to wrestle or any of that, particularly since you're trying to get some star power over on Rampage. I guess some people to watch Rampage is two
right,
hours
for sure. Yeah.
So you know, so I'm perfectly fine with that. I do like the fact that you have a rotation. You had the big storyline previous was, you know, Kenny Omega and Takeshita, what's going on with that. So I'm fine with a certain rotation. But yeah, I mean, you know. Talk about them to make the match that you're going to have on Rampage feel big, at least.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Also from JB in Jacksonville, I think I saw in the 6th minute of Excalibur previewing the next 3 days worth of matches that the Bucks and Hangman are on Rampage. Wednesdays are feeling like those late 90s WCW house shows where you never know who would show up. I'd be curious of your thoughts on how AEW did in terms of star power on a stadium show. I know ticket sales were down and they have a Saturday collision to consider, but it seems like it could have done more. Thanks to GoVIP, JB in Jacksonville. Yeah, so I mean, it's a bit of an addendum to his previous point, and some of the commentary is the same, but the fans attending Grand Slam hopefully knew that, you know, the Rampage matches would be on Grand Slam on Wednesday, and they would be seeing that match, that they'd be seeing Bryan Danielson or Ricky Starks. They didn't know that they would see Kenny, and you would think if you're trying to sell out, you know, sell tickets to a New York show, you'd want, you know, one of your top three, four, five stars, wherever Kenny is now, you know, a co-founder, EVP, megastar in Japan coming in. Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you plan ahead enough to want him in that match, want him in something of great significance? You know, if he was, you know, out ill lately, you know, maybe they had to call a bit of an audible. I mean, if you're saving Darby and Sting for Collision, and Christian Luchasaurus are, you know, major overact, and Orange Cassidy's been getting a lot of TV time and a push lately, and he's on Rampage. I mean, I'm not saying there's, the Embassy. I mean, it's not like there's a shame in being on Rampage. But from a ticket-selling standpoint for a stadium show, yeah, I mean, other people got higher billing and a lot more hype. Javier?
Kenny Omega mainly is what we're talking about.
More just like the lineup that you would construct to sell tickets to Arthur Ashe Stadium. In fact, it might have been better off being like a house show than a TV event because they could have just loaded it up, you know, with the top match on top and, you know, really strong supporting matches and not kind of had to strike this balance between hyping Dynamite for ratings and sort of the leftovers over on Rampage with throwing, you know, some stars on there, Danielson and Sting in particular, and the Bucks to try to, you know, draw a rating on Rampage. But it just hurt the framing of the show to sell tickets, I think.
Well, like I said, assuming that you know what the Rampage taping was also going to be, I mean, who are you really missing top guys is Kenny Omega and Takeshita, who were not advertised. But you are making up for it, the fact that you have Eddie Kingston, who, you know, on a normal show, you wouldn't say, oh, he's a draw, and he might not be for in terms of ratings on the same level as, like, Kenny Omega. But for selling tickets, you know, he is hometown guy. So is your champion, which is, you
right.
know, you would think that that's the one that you're that most people are going to going there. And just, you know, it's a kind of push and pull between the story because it makes a case that you're not making a big deal about Kenny Omega now because he just lost a fairly clean match. I try to remember if it was clean or not against Takeshita. You know, so he's out licking his wounds. That kind of makes sense. And then you get the surprise. You are saving a surprise. They did end up getting him. You know, based on the spoiler, should have said the spoiler beforehand.
I think we're so deep. We're so deep here. If you're still listening, it's on
you.
Yeah.
So you know, they did end up getting it as a surprise. So I'm fine with it overall because I mean it was a stacked. It's just, you know you had Bryan Danielson wrestling in a high level match. Am I right? That did happen, right? That did happen on Rampage or was that for Collision?
That who was sorry.
Danielson was Danielson
yeah,
Collision
Danielson
or
Starks.
Yeah, okay, so Danielson Starks.
In the what was it, the street fight? Is that what it was?
Texas
Deathmatch. Texas Deathmatch, yeah.
So you know, you did end up having the Elite Young
oh,
Bucks.
No, no, no. I'm wrong. I've been wrong all show. That's for Collision.
Okay.
For that.
Okay.
I led Chris astray. I hope Chris didn't stay for Danielson and Starks now that but that's a testament to, you know, I've got the notes in front of me, but there's so many things that they hyper plug there.
Yeah, so in that case, okay, you did also lose Danielson on that. So okay, a little bit more star power that was taken out. But hey, look, I had a down here in Miami the main event be what was it like it was Kenny Omega versus like QT Marshall or something like that. So you know, I can't complain with the card that Arthur Ashe got. So. But I could understand maybe, you know, if you take Danielson also out of the picture. But outside of that, you know, I think you got most of the other people.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Let's go now to is that everything from JB? Yeah. So we'll go to James in Clemson. On the subject of tonight's lineup, I noticed that this card was made up of all singles matches without stipulations. Kudos to Tony Khan for putting together a card like that without relying on typical AEW crutches. Yeah, I mean, that's I'm glad that James mentioned that. This was not, you know, there's no crazy. Did we have blood? We had no blood. We had no weapons.
No, I mean, a little incidental, but yeah, not like, you know,
yeah,
facial mask, you know,
yeah,
crimson mask thing.
Now, we did get we did get the announcement of a triple threat match, a three-way match, which, you know, AEW has been very good about not doing that. They also, you know, Tony Khan said we're not going to do ref bumps. And in this case, it was just a ref leaping out of the way of something, but not being bumped into and then, you know, hurting his leg and thus, you know, being slow to get back in. So I don't know if that counts as a ref bump or just a ref avoidance leading to a freak injury, quote unquote. But nevertheless, things that AEW has had the discipline to stay away from have been ref bumps and three-way matches. What they haven't had the discipline to do is to make stipulations really count when they happen. And yeah, I mean, Claudio Eddie, you could have imagined that being, you know, gratuitously violent. And even like Phoenix Moxley, although maybe plans changed because of Moxley's concussion before the bell rang. But yeah, it was a bunch of one-on-one matches, most cases titles on the line, and no special steps. So I like that. You know, it hadn't struck me, but I'm a fan of that, and I think AEW should do it more often. They have the talent to get away with it.
Yeah, I mean, they're not special steps, but there was something special in a lot of the matches. You had a title versus title match with Kingston and Claudio, so that is something you normally don't see. And you also had Sammy Guevara and Jericho, which is also a special moment because these two have been together since the start of AEW. So that's also something, you know, that you never see. And I did want to make a remark on that match. Nothing tells me that Jericho loves Sammy Guevara than Jericho doing a suplex off the apron to the floor. Because
yeah,
that's not a bump that he would take.
For yep.
So.
Yes, yes. And he might not take it again. Might be done with that. Okay, so JB in Detroit is by with a bunch of topics. He goes, one, I bet that we're getting Takeshita and Sammy as the Don Callis family teaming at WrestleDream against Omega and Ibushi. My question is, now that Jericho is involved, will the third member of the Callis family make it a trios match, and will it be Danny Garcia based on Callis calling him money tonight in the backstage segment? So we kind of covered that earlier, Javier. But, yeah, I mean, would you rather have three-on-three, Omega, Ibushi, Jericho at WrestleDream with Garcia as part of the Callis family?
Well, I mean, because the one thing I'm confused about, is Takeshita and Ibushi not supposed to be a singles match for WrestleDream?
Did they formally announce that? I should look that up.
I'm not sure, because, I mean, it kind of seemed like that's what they were going for in that. So I don't, you know, but I mean, yeah, I mean, it is kind of weird. You might end up getting a trios then. I don't like that. I think, yeah, I would much rather have Takeshita and Ibushi one-on-one, and then have with what, because that's the thing. I was surprised that you already had Kenny Omega make the save because because I had just said it a few seconds ago, but I was thinking on a much longer time scale. So that shortened up the time scale a lot for me. So I don't know if that might end up being, I'm not sure what's going on there. Cause that seems weird. Seems like the pieces are placed for a 3-on-3, but.
Yeah. I think that's very possible. I think I'd rather have Garcia as a babyface and go do something, you know, else and move on. But, you know, we might get Omega, Ibushi, and Jericho against. Well, you know what? Maybe Garcia joins briefly and just finds he can't stand on Callis. And that's a featuring babyface. He does participate, but it's sort of as a pledge, and he decides he wants out. Maybe something along those lines.
Yeah,
okay.
Right now it's only Takeshita and Sammy. I'm not missing somebody right now. So.
Correct, yeah. And they haven't announced a one-on-one match yet. That's not official, so they do have room to do otherwise. Right now, I mean, the main poster is Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. Okay, number two. I love the idea of pairing Sammy with Callis. Hopefully Callis can work with Sammy on his heel character and transfer his monster heel heat to Sammy with his rub. Eddie Kingston has an innate bond with the crowd that can't be explained. His genuineness is an X factor that can't be measured, and it was shown tonight by the electric atmosphere and reactions of the crowd during his match against Claudio tonight. Eddie had them eating out of the palm of his hand. Would you do anything different with Eddie in the past, and how about starting now, especially do you make him the face of ROH and try to see if that gives a boost to things, or do you think that's too big of a loss to AEW and they need him to be, you know, get a boost from this and be a regular player as a you know, top four or five baby face?
Man, I'm the worst person to ask about Eddie Kingston because I feel like I'm, you know, on the other side of everybody else because I'm not really that super. I understand what he's trying to do. I kind of appreciate what's kind of, you know, the character that he is and who he is. I guess I'm one of the people with no heart, as Zach said. I like my Eddie Kingston to like show up, wreck things, like be the guy for a little bit and then like go away, like to another promotion where I might find him later on, kind of thing. I don't like him like on my TV constantly. Don't know why. Just, you know, he's a bit much. And I think like if, I'm kind of like with Renee, whenever Renee has been with him, she's always rolling her eyes like, oh my God, Kingston's just way too much. I kind of feel that. So, but yeah, I mean, right now as the face of Ring of Honor with the championship, yeah, I mean, put him on Ring of Honor for a bit and make us miss him a little bit on AEW, and then build up another, like, you know, because I think he does best when he has like someone he just can't stand and wants to like either earn their respect or, you know, take something from them. I think that's how he's best utilized. And I mean, I'm thinking that he might end up, I'm not sure of the dynamics, I haven't really been following it on who hates who, but I'm pretty sure he might end up working with one of the, former, LAX, guys, Santana or Ortiz. I know that there's a whole cluster going on there, and Kingston's like on the side of someone and not somebody else, but I'm sure there's something going to happen with those people, would be my guess.
All right, then at number four, not sure how I feel about Mox having such a short title reign, but it does feel the title. But he doesn't really need the title, and it seems apparent he was meant to be transitional. I'm interested to see what they do with Phoenix's reign and if they use it to elevate a single status, as many fans have clamored for since the beginning of AEW. So yeah, I mean, the news we're getting, my reporting is this, it was not a planned title change, so I'm curious if Mox just gets it back in a rematch because Tony Khan wants to stick with that and doesn't want Moxley's audible to change the course of his booking of the international title, or if this is a way for Moxley to pivot away and get involved in something else, and we'll just have to wait and see. I'm sure that's Tony Khan's processing that. Do you think Moxley should get the belt back, or do you think Rey Fénix should have a long reign, or should they just get it to some third person we're not talking about pretty quickly?
Well, the Rey Fénix thing, it depends on his availability, because I like the gimmick of the title that makes it what for me, the makes the international title feel special is that it's defended once a week. I'm pretty sure that's correct, right? Whether it's on Dynamite, Rampage, or Collision, it's constantly being defended, sometimes more than once. It's constantly being defended. And, you know, so it is the workhorse title, and it felt like this was a way to get, you know, Moxley in random matches against your entire roster. I think that was the purpose of that. I think that you could do the same thing with Rey Fénix, and it would be a nice way to get him on board. But if he has other commitments, which means he's going to be missing, you know, weeks at a time, wrestling wherever else he's wrestling, then I'd get it. I don't like the idea of necessarily going back to Moxley because that kind of like feels like hot potatoing a bit too much. But if you got somebody else in mind that can take the title from him, you know, if he's not going to be around, someone who's going to be around and be basically do what Cassidy did for the title.
All right. Tony Storm's new gimmick is giving me a female vaudevillains vibe. I hope that they play out her story. I hope that they play out the story of her descent into madness like they did with Orange Cassidy, getting more and more tired and broken down week by week. The makeout spot during her match with Saraya definitely reminded me of Vince McMahon's vision from the late 90s to early mid or to the mid 2000s. Many thoughts on Tony Storm and the makeout spot. The crowd seemed, at least a lot, big part of the crowd seemed to react to that moment.
Okay. I mean, I love the spot, but you should have saved that for when she wins the title. I thought it was wasted with a kick out. Other issue I had with that match was, there was a spot early on think it was fairly early on, where Tony Storm does the green killer, which is the hanging DDT. It's a dangerous move. It broke Tomoki. What's that his first name? It broke Hanma's neck, so it is a dangerous move. But you got to be careful when you do it. Did it to Soraya two times. Someone who has neck injuries, which, I mean, again, it you could take it safely, you know, and it looked like they took their time before they delivered the move. The problems happen when the wrestler goes to it, you know, too fast. But, you know, so it looked like it was safe. But my problem is the fact that she takes two of them, one of them to the ramp on the outside, and then, like, I looked away and I turned back and Soraya was on offense.
And right. Yeah.
And I am like, what? I was thinking that my stream might have skipped ahead. So I was like, I was at that point checked out of the match where it feels like it was they were probably because the match also was short. It felt like this match might have been cut for time, yet they kept a bunch of spots when, you know, that. And I mean, I was like, what does this, you know, I mean, I'm not, and you know me, Wade, I'm not usually someone who talks about like, oh, you know, they're not selling enough, and, you know, in most cases. But for me, that was like egregious.
Yeah, really good observation there. Okay, since we found out tonight the ROH tag titles will be defended at WrestleDream, does that mean that this will be the second straight AEW pay-per-view without a men's world title being defended? And if so, is that asking too much of the fan base to shell out another $50 in such a short period of time? As I mentioned earlier, I don't think you want to rush an opponent for MJF onto WrestleDream, of all things. It's not, you know, this. It's not like All Out not having it. I think that's a bigger story. If you have MJF and Cole wrestling, I don't think there's a real good storyline reason to also have MJF defend the title. And frankly, I think Cole and MJF is the big thing right now that people are into. You know, it is a big thing that people are into. So, you know, I think if MJF wrestled some rando, you know, who won a battle royal or someone who's going to have a one-off and lose to him, that doesn't have as much storyline intrigue as what's going to happen with Roddy and Taven. I mean, yeah, I mean, are Taven and Bennett winning this four-way? We don't have the results of that yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's I didn't even bother saying who the other opponents are because that's just what makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's Brett and Taylor and the Hardys and Vincent and Dutch. I mean, yeah, we're getting Taven and Bennett for sure. I mean, Chris knows, and he's dropped. Oh, Chris is back. Let's ask Chris. Let's just bring Chris up. Chris, you're back. Can you confirm for us Taven and Bennett won that tag match?
Unfortunately, no. They didn't. You want
really?
To take another
okay,
guess
what happened?
Before I say who won?
Spoiler alert for people. Someone other than Taven and Bennett won.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about earlier. Yeah, spoiler alert. I know you guys.
No problem. Yeah.
But
it's a weird one.
You want me to say it?
It's fine. Yeah, just go ahead and say it now.
The Righteous one, which was shocking because basically the Hardys were about to win, and the Righteous took the pin after – I think Jeff hit a swan song. I believe that's how it happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that, Javier?
Well, I guess it kind of makes sense if you're going to be moving the actual titles to ROH.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, in that case.
Yeah. I guess you just, you move the belts back to ROH, and then you have the finish involved Taven Bennett, Roddy and Cole in some form or fashion. And you just kind of pivot to something without the belts. So I guess it does make sense in that respect, but it's certainly not selling pay-per-views. I'll put it that way. Chris, anything else you want to update us on?
The last thing, I know I was hearing you guys talking about the Bryan Danielson match. So yes, that was Collision. When we heard it earlier in the night, the crowd kind of booed, and I was kind of upset to not see Bryan Danielson at all. So when you guys were going back and forth whether it was going to be on tonight or not, I was about to press one, and then when you said, oh, it's Collision, I was like, all right, I'll wait till later.
Yep. It felt so obvious he should be on Grand Slam at Arthur Ashe Stadium instead of Collision. But, I mean, it's part of serving so many masters. I mean, you've got all these pay-per-views, special dynamites, you try to keep Collision alive, and Danielson Starks has been primarily a Collision feud. So, I mean, that does... From a brand affiliation standpoint, it is an excuse. It makes sense for it to be Saturday.
But it's just sad because it's technically going to be. So. the last year, so he might not be in the next Grand Slam at all. So this might have been my last chance to ever see him wrestle, and I might not get a chance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, and just
Chris,
one
anything
last
else
thing.
To update us?
Yeah.
Update us on anything else.
Just one last thing. So before the main event, Tony Khan came out again, and he asked us if we wanted a pay-per-view here. Basically said, hey, you guys want a pay-per-view here? And then everyone said yes, of course. So he said, duly noted, and he'll see us soon. So I don't know what that means. I don't know if he has any pay-per-view.
It means he's a liar.
Maybe.
It means he's a liar. He's said that like 3 times now in Miami. We haven't gotten one. So.
Well, you know what? Javier, I've breaking news. They're gonna book a new pay-per-view called All Aboard, and it's going to be in between All In and All Out, and it's going to be the third pay-per-view in an 8-day period, and it's going to be on a Thursday night before the NFL season starts. So there we go. Breaking news. Aggregators, have at it. YouTube videos, go with it. Anything else, Chris, from the taping that you haven't shared with us?
Well, I'm glad you're calling. I enjoyed the show. And I do hope he brings a pay-per-view here because he did get the audience excited. So if he doesn't, it's going to be very disappointing. And I'm sure next year not as many people will show up, you know.
He likes New York better than Miami. So
yeah,
he's
more likely to get it.
You are more likely. That stadium is more likely to get it for sure.
Chris,
thanks so much.
I'll definitely be here.
Yes. All right, Chris, don't be a stranger.
I'll try to call in more. I never really watched it live, but I'm going to try to do it every once in a while.
Yeah, cool. We'll look for you. Anything else before we really let you go? Is there anything else we forgot to cover?
No, the main event just started. The Acclaim came out, and people cheered, and people started to leave. So, you know, no one was, I guess, interested in the match. They were more interested in just the entrance. That's all. That's the last thing.
What is it? What is the main event right now? What's happening?
The Acclaim.
Oh, they're ending the show with Dark Order. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
The Acclaimed headline New York. All right.
Yeah.
Well, they got their ring entrance and then they leave. Yeah, I can understand that. That makes sense. All right, Chris. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.
Yep, you do. We've never interrupted a multi-part email for an outside correspondent, but that was worth it. very, very timely. Okay. We'll wrap up with the final couple points here from JB from Detroit. Who is the next title challenger for MJF? I really don't think it'll be Roddy. Could it be Adam Cole if we're going to wait all the way until Full Gear? I really think we're fine with Joe after the handshake. Could it be someone else entirely? Will the title be defended before Full Gear? I don't think the title will be defended before Full Gear. I mean, we're late September. I don't see any reason to rush into anything sooner. If it is, it probably would be Roddy. Or something along the lines, you know, related to the storyline. But to me, I think if they're going to, you know, have Adam Cole turn and join Taven Bennett and Roddy, then maybe a TV match is a way to accomplish that. But Cole, MJF should headline Full Gear. What do you think, Javier? What is that the only option? Are there other options that are apparent, I should say? Of course, there's other options.
No, I mean, if there is one and it's on TV, it'll be Roderick Strong.
Yeah,
that's the only thing that really makes sense.
He also wants to know, shouldn't Joe have been DQ'd for beating up the doctors and backstage officials tending to MJF? I mean, I don't know what the rules are on that. I could have done without it. I think Joe can just stare at them and just kind of make a little move towards them, and they could just back away. And that would have been better. I don't know what the rule is on shoving, you know, medics or, I don't know, maybe a kicked or punched them. Javier, what do you think?
I think you just said he gets fined, and that's fine. I personally was popping because the thing I hate the most in wrestling is when a doctor, you know, stops the match to check on the opponent. I mean, you know, not if it's legit,
right.
But you know, when it's like a way for the heel to get, you know, that fakes it. I just despise that. I was happy when Okada during his match with Danielson, granted Danielson had a broken arm, you know, basically said, no, if he's still alive, I'm going after him. And the same thing with Samoa Joe, just, you know, taking out I do find it funny that he took out like the ones that were probably just, you know, wrestlers, and like the actual, like, doctor was not touched. So.
Of course. Yes. I noticed that too. And then finally, he says, with all the hype going into Rampage Grand Slam and with it being a two-hour special Friday, do you see a ratings bump this week? It would be hard to not get a ratings bump for Rampage. The only thing is it's starting late, you know, after SmackDown goes off the air, and that second hour is going to be quite late, and that could actually pull the average down. But, I mean, this past Friday they did 335,000, one of the, you know, lowest numbers they've done. I mean, you know, back on July 28th, they did 324. But, you know, Rampage is not doing good numbers. I for sure expect a bump. The last time they drew 500,000 was April 14th. So they got to do 500, don't they? Don't they have to average over the course of 2 hours 500 up here? They did 416 on August 18th. They can get to 500, right?
Probably. I mean, I'm trying to think what anything's really going on. Don't think so. So, yeah, I mean, why not?
My over-under probably is a little under 500, but I think it's very possible. Like, my over-under probably be like 482.
Yeah, because I was thinking 490.
Yeah. So 500's a win. A little bit under it is fine. Anything under 450 is a big disappointment for a New York Stadium Grand Slam themed event with that kind of star power, including, you know, Sting and the Bucks. So,
I mean, yeah. if you had Starks and Danielson, I'd probably put it over.
Yeah,
up there.
There you go. Yeah, but they got to draw Saturday too. They got a lot of masters to serve. Javier, is there anything else you want to add about tonight's show before we sign off?
There during the commercial breaks when they go to picture and picture, there was a subplot going on where Taz was getting really cross with the other announcers for not standing up when wrestlers approached the commentary table, saying that, you know, it's bad. So there was a couple of there was some funny back and forth between him and the other commentators. The second time it happened was when Joe and MJF approached the table and he said, "I told you guys, you got to get out." And Excalibur said, he goes, "I'm going down with the ship." If need be. So
wow.
So yeah, that was really only they have fun when during the breaks where they tease each other a lot during those periods.
That's fun. That's a fun thing to share. All right, very good. Anything else, Javier?
I think that's about it. Let me just quick glance over my notes. We talked about Sammy. Yep, I think that is about it. In the moment I say, yes, that's all I got.
All right. Well, I'll look for your email later if you forgot something, but it'll be too late.
It'll be too late by then.
Yep. All right, cool. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Chris Ronsai, correspondent, our callers, our emailers, and we'll talk to you Friday night after SmackDown. Greg Parks, my co-host. Thanks, everybody.